Okay, so we'll start again this session, and our speaker now is Olivier Faugeras. Olivier is currently a director de recherche at INRIA, where he leads the NeuroMatComp project team. He graduated from École Polytechnique in France and holds a PhD in computer science and electrical engineering from the University of Utah, and a doctorate of science in mathematics from Paris's University. He is the author of the book Artificial 3D Vision, published by MIT Press. He co-authored two other books in computer vision. He was also an adjunct professor at MIT and a member of the AI lab. His current research interests are in mathematical neuroscience, that is, in applying mathematics to model populations of neurons, and applications of his work include computer and biological visual perception, neuronal diseases, plasticity and learning, models of functional imaging modalities. Olivier was elected a member of the French Academy of Sciences, and he is one of the founding members of the French Academy of Technology. Olivier.
Thank you, Nicolas. Thank you very much for this kind introduction. So my talk today will be about statistical neuroscience, a new area which I'm trying to develop with lots of colleagues. And I think it's important to understand why we need such a new discipline. And I will try and do this during this lecture. So as an introduction, I will show you this diagram, which displays the different spatial scales. So the key words is there are lots of different spatial scales in the central neural system, going from molecules at the synaptic levels, the neurotransmitters, to individual neurons and assemblies of individual neurons. So you have to deal with the fact that you go from the angstrom to the meter in space. The same could be said also for temporal scales. There are lots of different, very different temporal scales. And one of the challenges is to deal in a principled manner with all these different scales. So measuring the information, we know how to measure the activity of individual neurons with single electrodes. We also have available new technology, multi-electrode arrays, which allow you to measure this activity for a few hundreds of neurons. Of course, there are other modalities like optical imaging, which is kind of interesting because it's a higher level in the hierarchy. This is a little bit invasive for humans, but it's okay for animals. You have to take away a bit of the skull, which is shown here, and you have access to some areas of the brain, and with a camera, you can look at the activity which is revealed in some cases by dyes. So the animal here is looking at visual stimulus, its brain is in activity, and this is looked at and analyzed by the computer. But of course, the kind of populations that you're looking at here is more of the hundreds of thousands of neurons rather than a few hundreds like before. So you see the difference in scales. Up the ladder of scales, so to speak, EEG, electroencephalography, or MEG, which are two modalities which allow you to measure the electrical and magnetic activity of the human brain. This is non-invasive. But of course, due to the diffusion of the electromagnetic waves which are created by the brain activity, you have large diffusions. And so what you measure at the electrodes or at the sensors here is the activity of, let's say, millions of neurons. So we definitely need ways to represent the activity of neuronal populations at different spatial scales. I will concentrate on spatial scales in this lecture. Other reasons for developing this statistical neuroscience are more technology funded or they're due to technological advances. For example, in the BrainScale project I'm a participant of, it's a European project, people in Germany have developed large-scale integrations, large-scale devices that allow the practitioner to simulate, to emulate millions of neurons of a certain type. So it's important to be able to describe the activity of this neuron, to program this machine. Okay, so in the BrainScale project, this is available. Another project, the Blue Brain Project Simulator, is also dealing with millions of neurons and coming up with descriptions of the joint activity of these neurons is quite important. And in fact, it is fundamental. So these two projects continue with the Human Brain Project in Europe. So some of you may have heard of it. It's an EC flagship, which is based in Lausanne at the EPFL, and the Brain Project in the United States. So one of the reasons why you may want to describe hierarchical, to come up with hierarchical descriptions of populations of neurons is that if, say in the Human Brain Project, if you simulate at a very fine level of details the activity of, say, millions of neurons, you cannot, at least immediately, you cannot simulate the whole brain. So you need to interface this particular module that you're simulating with coarse-grained models. Okay, so these are a number of points which you should keep in mind in my presentations, in the rest of my presentation. So motivations for developing these representations or these statistical neuroscience. One of them is related to a lot of things that we've heard this morning, the notion of sparsity, which is omnipresent in AI or machine learning, sorry, we say now. So sparse representations, of course, when you're dealing with coarse scales of neuronal activity, you want them to be sparser than the fine grain. So that's a very important point, which I will come back to. Another important point, which is the prediction, of the occurrence of new emerging neural phenomena. I'm going to show you a short movie, which is a metaphor of what I'm talking about. This is the city of Rome, and watch the sky. In the sky, you'll see clouds. Actually, clouds of birds. You see these beautiful shapes that are changing over time. And of course, these shapes have very little to do with the individual descriptions of each of the birds. So that's a metaphor for the kind of things that I'm interested in doing, is you think of the neuron, the individual neuron, as an individual bird, and the populations of neurons as this flocks of birds. So emerging neural phenomena is one of the key points. Another very important point is understanding the role of randomness. So let me spend some time here. The brain is really a stochastic machine. If you look at what happens at the level of ion channels, there's a lot of fluctuations which are due to thermal noise. And these fluctuations can change completely the dynamics of the individual neuron and therefore of the populations of neurons. So understanding the role of noise, so to speak, but noise here is not a bug, it's a feature, as we say in computer science. Understanding that role is key to my enterprise here. So let me take an example. So I'm going to flash equations at you. Don't try to understand, and of course there's no need. What I want to do is to scare you by the amount of equations and make you feel the need for something else. Okay, so V1 is one of the primary, primary visual area. It's here in humans. And it's roughly 10 millions of neurons. And if you write For each of these neurons, if you write its equations, you have this very large number. Then if you include the synaptic connections between these neurons, for example, chemicals, you end up with even larger number of equations. And you end up with, so be seated, and you end up with this. But this 10 million times. Okay, so no reason to try and understand. Just the idea is that it's very complicated and we need something else. So what can be done? What can be done is perhaps, at least that's the road I'm following these days, is to develop statistical neuroscience in the sense of, in physics, they've developed statistical physics, okay? So as you all know, the inventor of statistical physics is Ludwig Boltzmann, and his key idea, his key idea was to be able, or his main incentive was to be able to explain and predict coarse properties of matter like viscosity, thermal conductivity, diffusion, and so on and so forth, pressure, can be predicted in a statistical way from the properties of the individual constituent atoms and molecules. Okay? So we want to do the same, we want to try and do the same for neuroscience. And I like this picture. I sent it to Nicola, but he didn't use it. So Santiago Ramon Cajal is a genius neuroanatomist from Spain, and he's the inventor of the theory of the neuron. Okay, people didn't believe that there were individual cells that were actually at the source of the brain activity. So he actually observed these neurons and drew absolutely beautiful pictures or line drawings, hand-drawn. And so this is not very visible, probably, but there's about 10 or 20 individual neurons here, which play the same role as the individual atoms here in Boltzmann's mind, from which he was able to explain or account for, I don't like the word explain, but account for conductivity and pressure. And why not try and do the same and explain the birth of concepts, such concepts as happiness or flowers in the brain from the joint activity of these neurons. Okay, so that's a bold goal, very ambitious. And now I will become a bit more technical. I'm going to spend some time explaining one technique, a mathematical technique called large deviations, which I think has the potential for, you know, coming up with this this theory. So, what is large deviation? It deals with rare events, okay, things that happen not very often, or which are very unlikely. And these rare events are important because basically they tell you what will not happen, and you're interested in what happens. So you take the converse, and so these rare events, large deviation principles, allow you to compute their probability, exponential decay of their probability. The key ingredient, or one of the key ingredients, is what is called in the trade as a rate function. A rate function is something which is positive. That's all we need to know. It is positive, and then let me explain here on this slide why it's important. So if you think of a sequence of random variables, the activity of n neurons, we'll say that it satisfies a large deviation principle with this rate function h if the probability of xn being equal to some given number or vector x is proportional to the exponential of minus n h of x. So you see that if h of x is positive, this probability will decrease extremely rapidly when the number of neurons n grows. Okay? So clearly, and this is something also called known in mathematics as the Laplace principle for computing integrals, so the random variables x sub n will concentrate on the points x where the rate function is equal to zero. That's a key point. Okay? Furthermore, if h reaches zero at a unique point x star, then the law of xn, the law of the neurons, which converges toward the Dirac mass at this particular point. And this is the concentration of measure phenomenon. This is what happens almost always. And the events that do not contain x star have a vanishing probability. Therefore, they're unimportant. So I'm analyzing what's important with what turns out to be unimportant exponential decay towards zero. I'm going to run through an example for you of how to apply this kind of ideas to a toy model. It's not completed toy. It's based on some equations that have been used very heavily in the computational neuroscience literature, the Wilson and Cowan equations. So what I'm representing here is four populations of neurons, which are represented by these disks. And neuron I and neuron J are connected by synapses. And I'm showing here the synaptic weight, okay, so the influence, if you wish, of neuron I onto neuron J, the J sub I J's. These, of course, exist. We know that they exist, the synapses exist. But we have no idea about what these values can be. Therefore, it is reasonable to model them as random variables, which is what I'm going to do now. So I'm considering a population of n neurons, and I will be talking about discrete and finite time t. So n is the number of neurons, and to characterize my population, I will do something very strange for some of you. I will let n go to infinity. I will assume that the population is infinite, and in fact, I will obtain a very compact and accurate description of my finite population. So the intrinsic dynamics, so the variable u sub I represents the membrane potential of the neuron. Okay, so it's just an exponential decay plus something which is important in terms of my introduction. This is noise. This is white noise. Okay, so this is an individual neuron model without any connections. Now I'm adding the connections. Okay, so I'm getting something slightly more complicated. I'm just adding the connectivity term. The J sub I J's are those of the previous diagram, and this is the equations, the set of equations I have, where I varies from 1 to capital N, and capital N can be 10 millions. Okay? So what are the coefficients? Well, the coefficients, as I told you, B sub I is random noise. I told you it was important, maybe channel noise. And more important, the J sub I J's are, I told you also that we knew that they existed, but we didn't know their values. So we model them as random variables with a mean and a covariance. Okay, so this is the model. Forget about F. So how do we analyze this set of equations? Remember, you have 10 millions of equations. So you're interested in the trajectory, in the lifespan of a neuron from 0 to t, so that's t plus 1, and this is the set of trajectories for an individual neuron. Now, I can solve these equations, and the solution to the network's equations is, and that's also a key point, it's a random probability. Why is it random? Two sources of randomness, the channel noise, the V sub I, and the coefficients. So the law of the n solutions, the n-dimensional solutions, is a random probability measure. Key point. And the goal is to characterize the limit, if it exists, of the average law with respect to the weights. Okay, so think of all possible networks, and you take the average of their activity with respect to all possible weights, you get something which is still random, and I'd like to know what happens when n goes to infinity to this particular probability distribution. It's not an easy problem. And it needs, you need to consider infinite sets of trajectories, since there's an infinite number of neurons, of course. You need to be able to shift the neurons back and forth, because one of the key ingredients to this theory of large deviations is that the neurons are undistinguishable. This is the reason why I took the average. So it looks hopeless. You take the average, the neurons become indistinguishable, but of course there are individuals, so we'll recover from this. So I will consider the set of probability measures on this large set. This tells me how the neurons' activity are distributed. And furthermore, the set of stationary probability measures. So let me introduce the final key ingredient, which is the empirical measure. So think of your N neurons here. This is a braid, a golden braid of N neurons, big N, between minus N and plus N. This is an element of the set of trajectories raised to the power N. And I will define this strange entity, which is the empirical measure, which tells me, basically, what it does. What does it do? It counts the relative frequency of this set of trajectories and all its shifted friends. Never mind the shifted friends. But it's a way of weighting where the neuronal states go in that complicated space. What is it? From the mathematical standpoint, it takes n trajectories and it gives you a measure. So it's a mapping from the set of trajectories to the set of measures. Okay? Now, the key mathematical idea is to do a mathematical trick, which is push forward the measure Qn, which is the measure that measures the activity of my n neurons, through this empirical measure. In other words, you're going to look at which parts of the state space is occupied on average by these neurons through these mathematical operations. Okay? This is a bit complicated, but you should think of it, this measure pi n, as a probability measure on a set of probability measures. So it's even more complicated, but together with James McLaurin, we proved last year that this pi sub n is governed by a large deviation principle with a good rate function h. Okay? And in fact, this generalizes previous work by Chaim Sompolinski from Hebrew University, one of the other founding fathers of computational neuroscience. The work of two mathematicians, Gérard Benarous, who is the head of the Courant Institute, Alice Guyonnet, who is at MIT, and Olivier Moineau and Manuel Samelides from Toulouse University, who had assumed that the weights were independent. So you have this large deviation principle, and one proves that there is a unique measure which minimizes H. This is the phenomenon I mentioned at the beginning of my talk about the concentration of measure. So there is a unique measure, which is the most important event. And this measure, you can characterize it entirely. It's an infinite dimensional Gaussian measure, a Gaussian process. So you have a complete description of your infinite number of neurons, which can be effectively computed. So numerical experiments are possible, and we are actively running these experiments. One key observation is that the limit measure is non-Markov. So let me spend 1 minute on this. When you solve this set of n stochastic differential equations, we all know that the solution is Markov. When you let n go to infinity, the solution is non-Markov anymore. Okay? So the emergence, so it has infinite memory, if you wish. So the emergence of new phenomenon, of emerging phenomena, may be hidden in this non-Markov measure. Let me summarize with some line drawings, pictures, what I've been talking about here. So we've proved the convergence in large space with a concentration of measure phenomenon, phi n goes to this Dirac, which is localized at mu sub e. This is in the large space of probability distributions on the set of probability distributions, concentration of measure phenomenon. Not very useful from the practical viewpoint. More useful is the following result, namely that the probability distribution of our n neurons converges toward this famous measure here. So the convergence holds when one averages over all possible networks, over all possible weights. Not very useful either, because you'd like to know what happens if you have one network. And we have this this result, which tells us that if you fix, if you don't average with respect to the weights, you still have convergence. So this is a result which is true for almost all synaptic weights. So you can draw at random a network, and lo and behold, you can characterize it with the limit measure. So to conclude, and to give you some take-home messages, large deviation theory of which I give you one simple example, they are essential in proving the existence of a limit law for the dynamics. If you're interested in characterizing these finite size networks with a limit measure, it allows you to characterize the law, and it allows you to establish average over all possible networks and quenched results almost everywhere. So the situation I just described is a natural generalization of the IID case, which was considered by, say, Chaim Sompolinski, where all the weights were identically distributed, independent and identically distributed. Okay? And moreover, if you assume that the maximum correlation distance between the synaptic weights is some number d, it means, okay, so you assume that the weights are not correlated if you go further than d. When you solve the finite size equations, you get correlations everywhere because of the connectivity. But in the limit, it turns out, and that's, an important result, the mean field neurons are uncorrelated if they are separated by more than d in distance, okay? So that means that the representation that we end up with through this analysis is sparse in the sense I described at the beginning of my presentation. So a few take-home messages. Regarding this particular work, the independent synaptic weight hypothesis produces nice mathematical results, but it is very unrealistic from the biological viewpoint. If you take into account correlations between the synaptic weights, which is what biologists, neurobiologists tell us, it is more realistic, but the mathematical description is much more complicated. And as I mentioned before, the emerging phenomena like this cloud of birds, might be contained in the non-Markov description. We don't know, but we're investigating this very seriously. And I will finish by emphasizing other potential applications of large deviation techniques, which I really believe will become important in this area. So epilepsy is one of them I'm looking at with colleagues, because epilepsy does involve very large neuronal populations, so it is a fantastic way of applying this kind of ideas. Now, at a different level, I recently got acquainted with different processes that take place in the neuron, for example, and the piecewise deterministic processes, which are a combination of continuous processes and discontinuous processes. For example, if you want to study the importance of stochastic ion channels, those fluctuations I was telling you about, they are, in a straightforward fashion, amenable to the analysis through the large deviations. Also, if you look at messenger RNA transport within the neuron, motor-driven intracellular transport, it's also a mixture of continuous and discontinuous processes, which are in a fairly straightforward fashion amenable to this analysis. And finally, gene networks are certainly a good, excellent candidate for this analysis through large deviations. I guess, and this is it.